This audio is brought to you by Business Radio, powered by Wharton, originally airing on SiriusXM.
From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School,
this is Your Money on Business Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Your Money, SiriusXM, Channel 132 Business Radio, that's powered by the Wharton School. I'm Kent Smethers, still joining you by Zoom until we can do a live shows again, but you can also connect with me in the meantime by going to my website, kentonmoney.com. So jobless Americans have been receiving extra money in their weekly unemployment insurance checks since March of 2020 as part of the federal program to help families through the COVID-19 pandemic. And those programs have now expired and millions of people are still unemployed. Of course, we know there's also lots of job openings as well. And so sometimes maybe a mismatch going on in the job market. But if you or someone you know is still struggling with unemployment right now, my guest today has some suggestions for what you can do about it. He is Mark Hamrick, who is the Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Editor Analyst for bankrate.com. Mark, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Kent. Thank you for having me.
And Mark, you had a nice article on Bankrate that's talking about when the unemployment checks run out. And so let's talk about just some background information for those expired benefits. You know, how much more money were people getting? When did they expire? And of course, you know, unemployment as a program still continues. We're talking about kind of extra money here.
It's interesting because I think for most individuals and certainly many of the 22 million Americans who lost their jobs in March and April of last year when the bottom really fell out of the economy, as essentially the lockdowns really took hold, I think most Americans were not intimately familiar with the kind of crazy quilt patchwork that we have in the sense of 53 different governments, 50 states, District of Columbia, all basically having their own separate unemployment programs. And I think that it's a little like turning over a rock in the sense that it was pretty ugly. And the administration of those programs was pretty ugly. It was rife with fraud. It was prone to essentially being hacked by individuals who were nefarious, not unemployed, but nefarious. And so, you know, for example, in the early stages, California had to shut down its program for a time as they tried to basically start weeding all of those things out. So it's a little akin to the don't build a prison in my backyard syndrome, where, you know, there's a problem getting these kinds of things funded. And there is an effort underway in Congress to basically try to fix all that up. You might think of it as an unemployment infrastructure program, but it remains to be seen whether that will be cleaned up. And I would just, as a sort of everyday American myself, would think that, you know, we don't have a real social safety net in this country. That was the closest thing to it. And so we really do need to pay attention to this, because as we saw from the huge lines of people in cars looking for food, sort of replacing the version back in the day during the Great Depression, where people were in line at soup kitchens and just trying to get an apple or something like that, it really did show how people were easily thrown into crisis not having
sure. Much yeah. Yeah, but it's of course, he said, you know, extra $300 in unemployment benefits at the federal level. Assumed that in fact it expired recently in September 6th. And so certainly you know, what people need to also, of course, realize is that we're talking about extra benefits and not, it's not like unemployment insurance itself has been discontinued. So let's talk about gig and freelance workers that are, you know, often getting, they were actually allowed to get unemployment benefits in the last year or two. That often was not the case pre-pandemic, you know, but now some of these benefits are extra benefits have worn off. And so what are their options right now?
Yeah. So as you know, Congress really did, Congress and the presidents in the two administrations really did come to the aid of Americans in an almost unprecedented way to approve a series of bills providing these kinds of programs. And two of them, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program and the Pandemic Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program, were really sort of at issue here, and also the third program that provided the extra $300. Those were essentially the ones that ran out once we got past Labor Day. And as you say, you know, typically Americans would then be looking at what's basically 26 weeks of compensation that averages $380 a week, which, you know, that's pretty tough to get by on in most parts of the country. And that's why there was bipartisan agreement they needed to do more than this. So if one were a freelance or gig economy worker that all of a sudden is now finding they're at the end of that program, well, as you referenced, we know that as of the last report, the end of June, was released about 3 weeks ago, we had a record 10.1 million job openings in this country. And that doesn't even get to the kind of jobs that seem to have, in many cases, really also had a lack of supply of gig economy workers in Uber and the like, because, you know, somebody trying to get an Uber or a Lyft these days is finding that there's not adequate supply and it's driving the prices up. So I'm guessing that some of those gig economy workers are going to go back to doing at least some of that. I happened to hear just recently the CEO of DoorDash said their average, as they call them, dashers work 4 hours a week. So that's obviously supplemental. So that might not be sort of a crisis situation where those people aren't doing those jobs because they're not relying on it as their primary means of income. But, you know, the first step really for everybody who would be at risk here really is consistent with what we recommend Americans do, whether they're currently employed or sort of in this crisis mode. And that is to have a budget, and that is to know, you know, what essentially you have coming in the sense of income. And for most of us, that's our jobs. For retirees, it's obviously different. And then to know what our regular expenses are. And you know, it's very easy these days in this digital economy where we aren't using cash, where we aren't writing checks like the quote unquote old days, to lose track of just what it is we're spending money on, and the many ubiquitous digital subscriptions that we're being lured and in some cases signing up for are a good example of, you know, these things could multiply and all of a sudden you're paying more money for things than you know.
Yeah, one of the things that people have to be planning for right now is that they may actually owe some taxes on some of the extra unemployment money. I mean, especially when it comes time to file, a lot of people may be in, you know, have some sticker shock, a little surprise there. You know, explain what your recommended people do to try to calculate their tax bill now, save for it now. Thoughts there?
Yeah, I would say, you know, this is consistent also with another part of advice that we give to people on a regular basis, and that is it would to some degree qualify as the need for emergency savings. And the number one financial regret we found consistently on the part of Americans through our regular surveys of the American public is the number one financial regret is the failure to save for emergencies. And parallel to that is the failure to save for retirement. And so obviously what we've been through in the last 19 months or so, I think qualifies as an emergency. And it's obviously a personal emergency for the people who lose access to their incomes. And then all of a sudden they had unemployment benefits, if indeed they filed and qualified and didn't necessarily expect that they, you know, would then be facing a tax bill, whether it's at the federal or state level. So obviously you're going to have to think about beginning to pay that when filing season rolls around. And there are some means to, you know, file for an extension and that sort of thing, but you're still unfortunately going to be due the taxes owed. So, you know, this information has been out there, but obviously for many people who were going through this for the first time, it could be a sticker shock.
It's certainly it often comes as a surprise, especially with new income. But let's talk about credit cards versus, you know, emergency account. I mean, some people say, well, you know, pay down the credit cards first because of high interest rate. And you could always use it as an emergency account.
Worst
case scenario. Others are like, well, you never know if your credit, you know, may, the cards, either the credit limit is lowered, it may, if suddenly be canceled on you, things like that. I mean, maybe it's not as reliable as an emergency account. How do you guys think about that trade-off?
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of credit cards, but the the first mantra that we talk about at Bankrate and our affiliated companies, creditcards.com and PointsGuy, all part of our parent Red Ventures, is that it's really necessary under ideal or most circumstances is to pay those balances off within the month, because the average credit card rate, and this really then speaks to those who are the best qualified users or customers, is 16%. So that gets expensive quickly, obviously on an annual basis, if you're thinking about trying to think what the math is. But we understand that if somebody's under a dire circumstance, they may have to let it roll for a while. And that's a better outcome than getting, thrown out of your house or something like that. But, I would say, think of credit cards as a tool and like a hammer. A hammer can be used to build a house or injure your thumb. And the same is almost true of credit cards. If you use them wisely, depending on whether you like a cash back card or whether you like one of the travel affinity cards that might help get you quicker access to discounted or in some cases free airline travel or hotel rooms. I'm big fans of all those products. But that's why we go back to the sort of basic piece of advice of emergency savings is really where you want to start. And I understand somebody coming through a difficult period, they may have already tapped out their emergency savings. They might have even had to tap some of their retirement savings under these circumstances, and that can come at a cost. I work at Bankrate.com, and we have articles on the site that people can reference with links.
So finally, in the article, you also talk about as people return to the job market, we know a lot of people in the service economy that got hit. You were thinking about hospitality, restaurants, and so forth. A lot of them don't want to go back to those to those jobs, maybe because of risk factors. Maybe they've taken some time. This time away to upskill, things like that. What are the areas of the economy where there's a lot of help wanted signs out there that you think people should maybe be looking for if they're thinking about a change?
Well, let me reverse engineer the answer to that a little bit, because we just did a survey at Bankrate where we asked people, are they going to look for work over the next year? And what do they want out of their work? And a majority of those in the workforce, meaning those who are working or looking for work, said they do plan to look for a new job in the next 12 months. So this is associated with what some people have called the Great Resignation. And the number one priority on the part of these respondents was either flexibility in hours or the ability to work remote. The second answer was essentially an increase in pay. And so when we're looking at still the huge deficit of employment that is in the leisure and hospitality space, and obviously COVID still raging out there, and also we have a deficit also with respect to the daycare options that are out there with not enough people working in that sector still. So that's a problem. So I think, you look at the places that are the signs are most visible, include leisure and hospitality, bars and restaurants, live sports and entertainment, accommodations. I think manufacturing and construction. I mean, just today we had the Home Builder Sentiment Survey, and they talked about the chronic shortage of labor in the construction industry. It makes me question, how can this persist for as long as it has? But it's one of the factors that they're dealing with, along with supply constraints.
Yeah. And we certainly know a lot of industries, you don't necessarily have to be that close to your customers, like in the restaurant business, construction being certainly one of them, where you're often working outside as well. And certainly big demand there, and very skilled opportunities. There are often opportunities for good pay. So fantastic. Thanks, Mark, for coming on the show and giving us your insights.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Ken.
And you can learn more about Mark and his work, and that's Mark Hamrick, and his work by going to thebankrate.com BusinessRadio.com website. You're listening to Kent Smithers, Your Money, Business Radio Series XM Channel 132.
For more guest interviews, check out our Wharton Business Radio Highlights podcast on iTunes and Google Play.